I absolutely love it. Williams are changing their team name back to what it was before 2014. Williams F1 team. Now, I hadn't realised this, but many people are joking that Williams have basically copied McLaren, because if you flip the new W in their logo upside down, it's very similar to the M in the current iteration of the McLaren logo. But for those of you who may not have been around since the late 90s when Williams last used a similar iteration to this logo, I ask you to humbly sit your ass down and lend an ear that Williams did it first. In fact, you could argue McLaren copied them, because the McLaren logo that we are more accustomed to didn't really get to a vague similarity until 1981, when Ron Dennis and Marlborough came a-knockin', when McLaren was basically known as McLaren International. The Williams Ford W has been a Williams staple since it began in 1977 as Williams Grand Prix Engineering. But this is something that has Frank Williams' seal of approval all over it, and now it's back. Now sure, many people out there might be thinking that, oh, this is nostalgia bait, or this is just another example of some member berries, but come off it, just have a little bit of heart in your soul. This is a brilliant logo, it's also ultra modern, it's got everything that you could possibly want, and it's a real sign that this team means business and they are super confident. It means that Williams' identity is stronger than ever, that finally, after years of being in the wilderness near the back, they are very much saying to everyone that, hey, we belong in at least the top half of the constructors, thank you very much. And it's doubling down as being an icon of British motorsport, because let's not forget, McLaren may be based in Woking in the United Kingdom, they are still at heart, basically, a New Zealand team because they were founded by a New Zealander. Although some circles may argue that it's owned by the country of Bahrain now. Yeah, just saying. And this logo will replace the existing one we've had since 2014 on New Year's Day 2026. The F1 team part comes from around the time when the team partnered with BMW. Although you could quibble that it sort of was around with Canon Williams' team between 1988 and 93. Either way, it's not a departure or anything. It's in fact seeming to me like a welcome home bit of news, and really, in this economy, this makes me smile a lot. When I first saw this, my eyes were wide, I was slack-jawed, and I had no complaints whatsoever. There was nothing to quibble about. This was like, oh my god. No, I'm not making this up. I am serious. This bit of news, this logo reveal, was absolutely brilliant. It had everything you could possibly want from it, and it was a really nice sign that this legacy team actually is somewhere where they're getting their act together, unlike one of the other legacy teams. That's quite rare these days to have a completely perfect F1 news story, and for that, I offer up a Citizen Kane round of applause. The quote from their marketing director summed up the sentiment around the news as well. It is inspired by our past, confident about our future, and clear about our identity. A championship-winning Formula One team with a burning drive to win again. That tells you all you need to know. But alas, there is a sprinkling of cinnamon of cynicism, with some people mentioning that Alex Albon doesn't get a look in the reveal video, and that they are very much focusing on Carlos Sainz's podium around Baku. And at best, he maybe got a split-second shot, if anything at all. Well, in the Spaniard's defense, that podium did mean a lot, and it was won on merit. In fact, you could easily argue that George's podium around Spa 2021 wasn't mentioned. So quite frankly, in this particular circumstance, I ask you all to pipe down. It's a great logo, and Alex has easily been a part of that confidence-building exercise for Williams. He will be part of their history, so just stand here and let time pass for once. Lovely. But what's not so lovely is the ongoing case of Felipe Massa versus Bernie Eccleston's F1 of 2008. Or at least, it was ongoing. The case has been put on pause, essentially, after 3 days of hearings, and a date for a resumption has not yet been planned. Only for a future date. That meaning, potentially, it could never be reopened at all, and we might be ending up in a state of limbo, this case becoming more irrelevant by the day. The original teeth that it had, that we all thought that, oh my god, is Felipe Massa about to steal the championship from Lewis Hamilton? No, it's nothing like that anymore. Besides, Felipe wasn't really gunning for it anyway. He wanted a sense of justice against Eccleston and Mosley, who he believed basically did not look in hard enough regarding Crashgate. They knew about certain things, allegedly, and that they chose not to do anything about it because the cascade of events after Nelson Piquet Jr.'s orchestrated crash, albeit a little bit harder than Briatore expected, brought out the safety car. He went into the pits. There was a malady with the pit stop with the fuel rig being attached to it, which partly explains why refueling no longer exists in Formula One because of such instances. Essentially, the argument against Massa was that, hey, you weren't good enough. You made other mistakes in the season, bruh. Yeah, just take the L. And based on Felipe's comments, he is trying to do this for the justice of the sport. And given that he has said that he spent a lot of his own money in building a strong legal team, I seriously believe he is not doing this for the money. And then you might be thinking, who knows what Bernie might do in retaliation? You know, because that old man, he needs that little bit more money, you know. Spare a coin for Bernie Eccleston, wouldn't you? In any case, it's a really sad story. It's lost impetus over time. It looks kind of sad at this point, and it's really such a shame because I really rated Felipe Massa. I was a Massa supporter when he came on the scene for Sauber in 2002. I really rated his maverick nature alongside Takuma Sato. Those two were absolutely electric during that season, which was dominated by Michael Schumacher. But I do think ultimately that this is going to lead to Felipe Massa essentially being a persona non grata around the Formula One world. I don't expect him to be around the paddock for a good few years at minimum. And especially him being attached to Ferrari, who he actually nearly won the championship with, I expect him to not be receiving Christmas cards anytime soon because he's actually hurling accusations in their direction along situations regarding Fernando Alonso. The Brazilian claiming that the Scuderia themselves did their part to silence his comments regarding Crashgate, that the team pushed hard for him to retract comments he made regarding Alonso's involvement in the situation. Very important considering that the Spaniard was about to join them in 2010. Massa made these comments around October 2009 as he was recovering from his horrific Hungaroring incident with Barrichello. But then Felipe, allegedly, refused to do so, didn't use that prepared statement, and came up with his own simpler and much more protracted, really irritable statement. And you could easily argue that maybe the sentiment after that is explaining why Felipe completely became a wet fart towards the end of his Ferrari career. Then Fernando being faster than him in certain cases just rubbed salt into the wound. But naturally, there's an element of the spanner speculation here, and it's certainly a lot bigger than this particular aperture, but we'll save that for another time. I get the story has been his own pursuit of justice, but what was the point, really? It seems pointless and costly right now. I'm sorry to bring the room down, folks, but I've really not talked about it before much on this channel in any big sense, and this whole thing kind of sums up why. It's hiding to nowhere. And still on Ferrari news, Lewis Hamilton looks very much like he's talking to a horse-shaped brick wall, given all the stuff that we have heard, be it rumour or otherwise. Because I seriously thought that the Mexico City Grand Prix might have been the place where Lewis Hamilton had the opportunity, a real one, to go for the podium after having a fairly solid time of it around the Austin circuit. Things were coming up Lewis. But then, due to one thing or another, things fell apart, that he ended up with a 10-second time penalty and couldn't finish any higher than the bottom end of the points after having qualified third. It all being undone essentially due to a lack of communication via the race engineer's part, him not really telegraphing the importance of the situation, and to give back the advantage that one of the three dings to the stewards that arose around Hamilton's name, one of them got pinged for that particular penalty. The other two, there was no further investigation necessary. And yet, this is once again a situation of Adami, his race engineer, dropping the ball or not telegraphing things correctly. Now, okay, around Melbourne or even as far as Monaco when this last came up as a big issue, you might be saying, well, it's still early days. Rome wasn't built in a day, which is a fairly apt type of thing to say because, well, Ferrari, Italy. But now at this point, toward the end of their first year together, you surely must be thinking, oh, come off it, guys. Surely they've come up with some sort of a system, or at least Lewis has been able to stress the importance of saying things at the right time or to be much more direct. That hasn't really happened, and we're 20 races into 2025 with only four more to go. Robert Dornbos stating, for example, that the communication between Lewis and Ricky, his engineer, doesn't feel like they're switched on to each other, and I would agree. You rarely hear feel-good moments between them, not even a basic rapport that you get between, say, Charles and his engineer Brian Bosie. One thing is for sure, it is no GP and Max, not even close. And everything you're hearing right at this point, be it a rumor or anything else, it's just essentially Lewis trying to carve out Ferrari in his own image using the vast experience he has at hand, and Ferrari simply just doesn't want to know. They are stonewalling various things, supposedly, and it's leading to a degree of frustration and Ferrari seeming relatively aimless, this being their longest drought of any sort of major silverware or title since Kimi Raikkonen and 2008's Constructors' title. And in fact, there are other people proposing that maybe Ferrari are sick and tired and are really pushing for Oliver Bearman to replace Lewis at the end of his original 2-year contract, that they don't want to extend the relationship with the 7-time world champion any further. This is just completely ridiculous. 2026 is going to be very important for Lewis, or he could find himself having his hook being slung. And if that is the case, even after the crushing morale blow of Abu Dhabi 2021, this is no way that a team which Hamilton idolized since he was a child should be treating him. And even as an outside observer, this is a really sad state of affairs. Because honestly, Lewis deserved a somewhat decent send-off with the Scuderia, even if it didn't result in a world title. I really expected that several wins would be afforded to him. There is still time, of course, but this is a relationship which is clearly not going the way that anybody planned, especially Lewis himself. That he is very much experiencing how good he had it at Mercedes, where they hung on his every word. But right, we need to get onto the track, because I want to talk about something cool, because Interlagos is a doozy. One of my top four. And with a sprint weekend to boot. And yes, I actually happen to like sprint weekends, thank you very much. I know, controversial, but I do, and I'm not ashamed to admit that. Yes, the track got resurfaced last year, which did change some of its characteristics, but apart from that, it's essentially the same format that Ayrton Senna drove on back in the early 1990s. A true bastion of the calendar, and something which should never be taken away from us. This one stays, all right. Hey, Stefano, don't you dare say, oh, the kids don't like Interlagos, which is why we're not going to be extending their contract. That seems to be the excuse all the time, isn't it, lately? It's all about the kids. Think of the children. But look, seriously, this track has got absolutely everything in such a really tight package. You've got the long straight, you've got the Senna S, which is always a doozy. I'm expecting at least one car to go off at turn three, especially if it gets rainy. Then you've got the DRS elements, you've got the twisty bit of sector two, you've got Zhong Cao pulling up onto the straight. It's got the lot. You cannot be disappointed with the circuit. There are even barely decent overtaking opportunities to be had here. And wouldn't you know it, there is rain forecast again. And even though it may not be as torrential as it was last time out, you've still got to remember that Interlagos, Sao Paulo, it can have a bit of a microclimate. You never know what's going to happen. But what we do know is that some sense of rain will be dropping, and Saturday seems like it's going to be the biggie, which is around the time of the sprint and qualifying for the Grand Prix. Oh, I am so excited. Temperatures are in the low to mid 20s, supposedly, so maybe we are not going to be having a scorcher, and Mercedes could have a sporting chance of muscling things up against McLaren and Red Bull, especially with the Milton Keynes team most likely bringing parts here to boost Verstappen's chances. Even if Mekies admits there will be a price to pay next year, it's a risk they're willing to take, which I personally agree with, as I said in a recent video about the subject, that all the stuff that Mekies are doing right now to refine things and bring upgrades to 2025 is not just to provide Max a chance of his fifth world title. It's about changing the processes, refining things, ironing out kinks and bugs and what have you, to make sure that they don't have to deal with all of that next year. This year, it's either Max wins the title or he doesn't, but hey, it's best to really push things to the limit, all to make sure that when the wind tunnel comes online, the brand new one, it means that everything is good to go, correlation will no longer be an issue. So, quite frankly, Law, this is a good idea. I don't mind it, and it's providing us all valuable excitement. No longer the procession that McLaren were trying to corporately orchestrate, going all the way to Abu Dhabi in front of many of their key investors to provide a sense of a party. Oh yeah, Max is going to make their lives a living hell. Then there are tyres, something which is both curious and dull at the same time. In the midst of the F1 higher-ups musing potentially making two stops mandatory in the future, not just Monaco, Pirelli are bringing compounds which are one step harder than they were around Interlagos last year, them claiming that the limited dry time in last year's running showed excessive wear with the C3s through C5 selection. So we've got C2s through C4, with the C3 being the medium, and that very much being the music to George Russell's ears. So this could play into the hands of many and make the chances of a one-stop all the more likely. Yay. But it's not entirely a dead set with that brand new surface of the track, which may not be quite as new as it was in 2024, but it might make the one stop a little bit hairy and not necessarily the fastest solution. And with the chance of there being rain, which means that you're not using nearly as many dry tyres, it could provide maybe a spicier selection for the race itself. Okay, before we get to my top 5 predictions, who else do I think has a chance of scoring the points this weekend? Ferrari should suit the tyre range given, and Hamilton could be on to score solidly since his wet weather feel around here is still good. It's a track that he adores, and considering he's an honorary citizen, his motivation will be higher than ever. Even if his qualifying is messy during this regulation cycle, something he's admitted to, he can, I think, move forward on a bit of pace, just not quite enough to broach the top 5 or a whole race distance. Then there's Yuki Tsunoda, and considering that he is steadily improving his pace, and he seems to be getting the support of his team, them delaying the driver decision until maybe the end of the season, it provides him more of an opportunity to show what he can do. And if he's able to get the same gamut of parts that are being afforded to Max Verstappen, then surely a points finish is going to be something afforded to him. Perhaps maybe a cheeky P7 or something like that. For Williams, I think a double points finish could be somewhat realistic, and this might be complementing the afterglow of them revealing their brand new identity for next year, being received with universal acclaim. With Sainz most likely on course for points as long as he has a tidy weekend and he doesn't crash into anyone. And Williams, they've really been strong on more efficient aero this season, as well as having low drag when they need to. So Interlagos should reward that. And Albon, him being gentle on tyres and good in traffic, should he need to, might provide him a chance to course correct after the perception has been had that he has really fallen off in recent times. Yeah, I know, 2 points potentially, I think it could be 8th and 9th, it's not exactly, you know, big potatoes, it's small potatoes in fact, but as I always say, at least there are potatoes to have. And then, Kimi Antonelli maybe could be in the shot for a points. I'm not entirely sure whether it's going to be 6th or 10th or what have you. I do think there is a chance for Mercedes to make good, because if I'm thinking Russell could do well around here because I've not mentioned his name, then Kimi should stand to benefit and they both score at the very least. But I don't think Antonelli is going to be as strong as he was around Mexico, where he really did rattle George's cage, didn't he? Oh, it was so much fun to see. I really do rate George, but I also really like seeing Kimi having a moment where he can needle the more experienced driver. It shows that there is life in the young kid yet, and that, oh, this is just the beginning of his career. Imagine what he might be able to do next year. Now, of course, you might be wanting to imagine what I think my top 5 selections will be for the Brazilian or Sao Paulo Grand Prix, depending, take your pick. Well, look no further, here they are. In 5th place, I have Charles Leclerc. Now, Charles definitely does have speed around here, but Ferrari's track record in recent times around this circuit has been, it's really bitten them in the bum when it comes to strategy. 2024's track resurfacing really bit them hard, and it left them really scratching their heads in regards to pit stop strategies and what have you, especially when the rain came down. Ferrari misstepped basically on setup and strategy, and it really left them out of the chances of scoring a likely podium, that being afforded to Verstappen, Ocon and Gasly. I still can't believe that Alpine managed to get that, and it saved their season, basically. And considering that this is a sprint weekend, we only get one practice to get things ready in terms of the operating window, and the fact that Ferrari has to do all of that lifting coasting, they can't ride the car as low as they would want to, then it really means that their best chances of scoring decent points might be coming in the sprint, and that maybe they'll have to do something else that means they're not quite as spicy in the race. There is still very little room for error, and any sort of error means you're going to be either stuck in traffic or you are going to be compromised in terms of when the safety car comes out. I do think that Leclerc's qualifying punch over one lap, it's still strong. I certainly think he's going to be in with the top 3 rows or something like that, but it's going to be up to him to push any further. 5th, I think, is relatively reasonable. It could be maybe a chance for a podium if all the stars align and Ferrari don't make any mistakes and it remains dry. It all comes down to what the strategists have in mind. And for them to maybe want to capitalise on the fact that Charles is on a fairly decent roll, him clutching a couple of more podiums looking a bit more solid, maybe Brazil might be a continuation of that. But I do think nonetheless it's going to be a bit of a tall order. And then in 4th place, and this take is going to be quite spicy, so do brace yourselves, Lando Norris. What? Yeah, dropping Norris behind Piastri for this race is a pretty bold manoeuvre, and it could easily mean that Oscar Piastri retakes the championship lead, because you've got to remember, Lando may have retaken the lead after initially having it at the beginning of the year, all the way through to Jeddah when Oscar took it, but it's only by a single point.
one bad weekend could turn the tides again in the Australians' favour. And one thing you've got to remember here is that, yeah, Lando has been on an absolute tear of it since the Dutch Grand Prix when Oscar took his last and most recent victory. This is a situation, Interlagos, where it's been sort of kind where Lando has been on the podium before, but it's also been the place where Max took him round the back and pummeled him with a sledgehammer, or maybe more aptly, with a spanner. Figuratively speaking, not literally. And yes, you might be arguing, well, Lando won the sprint last year. Well, that was mainly down to team orders. Oscar was going to be the one to win it, but then Lando came in because, at the time on Saturday, there was a championship to be had. By the end of Sunday evening, there was not. And those memories will be at the back of Lando's mind, that he will hopefully have a much more solid time of it. And the thing about the McLaren situation is that it's really good in really hot temperatures, and the weather might be fairly decent, 26 degrees on the Saturday, but come Sunday, there may be other teams that might be in the mix, and a certain George Russell, if he qualifies well and starts well, that could easily be a little bit of a problem. And now, Lando is no longer the hunter. He is the hunted. That could change things all around again. Although you might be able to argue that the playfulness of Lando could easily pay in his favour, especially with the tyres coming good and him being able to manage them well. And it all depends really on what McLaren do with the safety car. And the whole thing about their relatively slow pit stops. McLaren are not offering a solution to that until next year when they can get some brand new equipment and really look into it. Both he and Oscar, Lando, they're going to have to deal with it. And this could be a real situation where time is lost in the pits, which might cost either one of them a chance at the win. But it also really depends on what the conditions are. If it does go from wet to dry, we can see Lando being the stronger of the two McLaren drivers. Miami was a very good example where Lando was completely reeling in Oscar hand over fist. So timing errors are really going to be important here, and McLaren do not look healthy in that regard at the moment. And then, of course, the RB21 bringing in upgrades. A win is going to be very, very hard. McLaren absolutely have to nail it. And then Lando's overall confidence. Yes, he's been on a good run, but that could easily end at any time. And this could be the race that it does, because painful memories will have you when he was hunting for the world championship. So therefore, I think fourth, it's a fairly defensible shout given the format and what we've seen in the past and the fact that we've got all this uncertainty. It's why this track is so beloved around the world. And if you've not been able to guess, Oscar Piastri, I think, is going to be finishing third, just getting on the podium, 3 points more than Lando, at least in my theory, and maybe having enough to take back the championship, especially if he's able to do well in the sprint like he did around last year, only ceding the win to Lando due to team orders there being a championship, then Lando returning the favour around Qatar, the stronger of the circuits for Piastri. And this track might be the opportunity for him to take back some points, because his track record around here has been steadily progressing. It was a little bit hard to tell in 2023 due to his really unfortunate situation where an errant tyre clipped his rear wing. He ended up a lap down, technically, and he was on a hiding to nowhere. Last year looked stronger, and certainly a lot less haphazard than Lando's was, but it's still a little bit hard to tell. It looked a little better than it was around Mexico and Austin, but I don't think it's going to be enough for him to be either first or second. And surely, after all of the trials and tribulations he's had since Baku, surely there is a solution at hand. The tyre selection should help, and Oscar is really smooth in his input with steering, and with the more abrasive track, that might help in terms of tyre wear, but that front left has been a bit of a bugbear. And it all really comes down to what McLaren do in the safety car window, and with those pit stops. Oscar has had the same thing before him as well as Lando, so this could easily affect him as well. So really, my hunch is really based on the notion of the sprint performance, that being relatively uninterrupted, unlike the race. So that's really what I'm kind of going on with this particular prediction. And as long as he can qualify ahead of Lando and keep it relatively clean, I think a chance of a podium is quite reasonable. But there are many things that could easily go against him, and it still means that the Dutchman is going to be closing in on him and Lando. And if Brazil turns out to be yet another clanger, then Qatar matters more than ever. If Oscar completely falls flat around that track, the LaSalle one, then it's pretty much game over. Then in second place, I've got one George Russell. Now, this one is a little bit bold, but considering that the temperatures of Sunday are going to be 21-20, it's relatively low. And the W16 does perform well in those conditions. And this is the place, do not forget, where George got his maiden victory. Yes, of course, the W13 was not known for its immense performance, but on that day, Russell and Mercedes, they pulled it off. They executed things well when things completely went awry for many other drivers. So you've really got to be aggressive with your restarts and have good execution overall, which is what afforded him his first win around this track. And as long as Mercedes trust Russell's instincts around this track, then maybe a chance of the victory could be afforded to him, or at least a very solid second place. And that's been a real situation that was really brought back into the public eye around Mexico, where George was making all of these assistances, him supposedly meaning to be the team leader, although Mercedes claimed there is no thing as a team leader, although really, George should be, based on his experience, more so than Antonelli, at least for now. It resulted in Russell losing time behind Antonelli and getting more and more irate. And it's those kind of shenanigans which may result in him leaving that team altogether, even if he wins the world title or not. And we sort of saw a similar thing around Interlagos last year, where Russell looked like the only person who could maybe take on Max Verstappen in those conditions. And he was saying the tyres looked okay, he wanted to stay out, but Mercedes overruled him anyway. That's something they really tend to do. And that meant the two Alpines, led by Esteban Ocon, took those points, which really should have been George's to have. And it does make me wonder, could we see George Russell maybe rebel against the Mercedes pit wall a little bit more in the future? Especially if his future is being defined on maybe external circumstances, that he might be thinking, blimey, what have I got to lose? I may have to go for it, you know, give it a go. Oh, sorry, wrong impersonation. Anyway, George, I think, has the chance of getting a solid podium, a chance of a win. I don't think it's going to be a completely dominant round from Max Verstappen this year, as long as it remains not entirely torrential, like it was last time. Because you make me think, 17th to 1st, and he still had that much of a lead. My goodness. Yeah, if you couldn't tell, I'm predicting Max Verstappen to win this again. And if rain wasn't being forecast at all, I think this would be a bolder call, but it isn't. Rain is going to be playing some part this weekend, be it small, large, otherwise. It is, like Spa in a way, kind of unpredictable. But we do know that something's going to happen, and Max will fully capitalise on it, him being 36 points behind Lando Norris in the championship. And if McLaren do not get both their cars on the podium, it could be even closer. One DNF from Lando or Oscar, and Max is right on top of them. And Interlagos rewards drivers who can build a really solid rhythm, given the fact that that lap is really, really short. You have to be hitting it every single time. And Max has proven many times that he is capable of doing this around this track and with a crowd that really rates its racing drivers. Max has proven himself around here to these fans, and they really respect him, alongside Lewis Hamilton, alongside other people, including Gabriel Bortoleto, who is going to be his first home race, and Franco Colapinto to some extent. But we're not talking about them, we're talking about Max. And Max, yeah, I do think he is going to be taking this, because Red Bull's racecraft in recent times has not been nearly as messy as it was at the beginning of the year, where you had mishaps in pit stops, going on the wrong tyre. It seems a lot more clean than it was, at least for Max Verstappen, Yuki Tsunoda having to bear the brunt of the maladies that Red Bull had been afforded. Remember that 12-second pit stop for Tsunoda, which really cost him any chances of Red Bull having a double points finish. And with the tyres being a step harder than they were last year, it might mean that Red Bull could get frisky. They might be the ones to maybe try the one-stop strategy of, say, starting on the softs, scampering off, hoping for starting on the front row, and then going long on the hards. And hey, if rain does play a part and they change onto different tyres, then all the better. The chances of there being a fresh set of C4s to use are very high here. So basically, I think that all the ingredients are here to cook up yet another Max win around this circuit, and that it might not be as dominant as we saw from Lando last time out of 30 seconds, but it will be enough. George, I'm predicting to be the closest competitor. The two McLarens, not that far further behind, but Mercedes look kind of good around here, based on what we've seen with the 16. The RB21 is constantly improving. This is just my read on this. McLaren might be able to rain on Red Bull's parade, but only if the rain doesn't come. But what is coming along for you is this video, which I am sure you will like. So I'll see you over there, maybe with a different top or not. Who knows?